the big news of the day, of course, is that just a few hours ago, Dr. Mimi Duhin announced to the Board of Supervisors that there has been a second case of coronavirus confirmed in Mendocino County. So can we start with that news?
Sure. So the second case came back positive earlier today, I believe. We are not releasing any details on that yet. I am not privy to them. I can tell you that so far the county has run 124 COVID-19 cases. 75 have come back negative. 2 have come back positive. And if my math is correct, that leaves 47 that are still pending. The number of cases is obviously going to continue to grow, and the testing levels are quite low. 124 tests out of 85,000 is a very small fraction of the tests of the population, obviously. So the actual number we can assume is much, much greater than 2. Nationwide, there are now in excess of 50,000 cases. It's growing nearly 10,000 over the last 24 hours. The death rate has climbed in the U.S. to 600, and my data is a couple hours old, so all of that has grown quite sharply as well. Worldwide, we're about 400,000 cases and about 18,000 deaths. So it's continuing, and unfortunately, the United States is on a very sharp part of the curve. So the case count tomorrow will probably be in excess of 65,000, and that will continue to climb sharply. The situation in New York is pretty grim, and they are very, very much on the steep part of the curve. There is considerable concern that the Bay Area will be approaching that part of the curve sometime later this week or early next week. Fortunately, California and the Bay Area was a bit more proactive in encouraging and then requiring social distancing and shutting down unnecessary activities. So hopefully we will avoid sort of the overwhelming crush that is being experienced in New York right now.
Yeah, Drew, could we talk a little bit about where that second case was?
So that's a good question, and I'm sure a lot of listeners really, really want to know. I am not privy to where it is. I have not met with Dr. Duhin yet today. And frankly, even when I do learn where it is, I am not going to disclose it because as a public health matter, we want this to be a county-wide response. We don't want people thinking, oh, it's in Elk or it's in Hearst or it's in Willits. It's a county-wide problem, and it's a county-wide pandemic as well as a national pandemic.
I'll admit I set you up for that.
Yeah, I realize that. So, and I want to just reiterate, I think I've done this a couple times. I work in the Ukiah ER. Dr. Rochelle works at the Anderson Valley Health Center. I am on the advisory panel with helping Dr. Duhin. But the views that we express are entirely our own and do not represent any organization or government entity.
Absolutely.
That said, I do think that the Department of Public Health here in the county is doing a very good job using evidence-based science and moving as aggressively as they can to prepare for this sharp part of the curve that we may be approaching.
I have to admit I've been digesting one of the caller's questions yesterday about the discordance between different bodies' advice, WHO, CDC. But I think the very statistics that you just spoke to as far as the world numbers, New York, California, really shows how different this is in different places and what we need to do in different areas. So I don't know that that's a bad thing, that there are actually different approaches to this in different places.
No, and I actually, it's funny you should mention that specific caller because I was thinking about his question as well, particularly in regard to testing. And as we all know, testing has been in short supply. It would be lovely to have 300 million tests that came back in an hour that were quite accurate. we don't have that. The tests that we are running, as you can tell by our pending case count, even in this county, take several days or longer. Some of them are taking as long as 7 or 10 days to come back, which is clinically almost useless. And so it would be great to have good testing, but that didn't happen. And so now we're trying to work with the tools that we have available to us.
As we would say all through my schooling, we called it academic.
Well, I don't know where you went to school, but I'm not familiar with that word, Dr. Rochelle.
Well, I'm curious, too, at both of you as local frontline healthcare providers, we don't have a good picture from the testing necessarily, but you guys are seeing patients every day. Can you give us kind of a snapshot of what it looks like to be, are people coming in with concerns about coronavirus cases, or are you seeing people with symptoms? How does that look?
Well, keep in mind, Drew and I have very different practices right now. When you say we're both on the front line, no, Drew is really on the front line. That is urgent, emergent, or thought emergent. I would say to the Anderson Valley Health Clinic's credit, we have fully endorsed telehealth. Quickly, and that's probably going to save our clinic in some ways.
But yeah, and telehealth is absolutely something that we need. I mean, tele-everything is really what we're doing. I think my kids are at home doing tele-music lessons right now. So it's really critical that we embrace this social isolation, social distancing, as hard as it is and as stressful as it is. I was just sent, and I've seen this data in multiple forms, but to not overload listeners too much, there is a good sort of summary as to what would happen if we do not limit the spread of this virus. And the listeners with access to the internet can go to ProPublica, ProPublica.org. There's a blue box on the right-hand side that breaks down what happens if 20 or 40 or 60% of the population gets the disease in 6, 12, or 18 months. And hospitals are going to be overwhelmed, really over 2 times capacity, if only 40% of the population gets this over 12 months. And so that really speaks to how quickly our healthcare system is simply going to be swamped. And we're seeing that in New York right now.
So back to the key word, flatten.
Flatten the curve, social distancing. That's really how we're going to survive both locally and nationally.
Flattening the curve again is that we don't all do this in a short period of time, that 40% is spread out, and that allows us to maybe catch up.
Correct. And, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of confusion on this, and that confusion is starting at the very top of this country's leadership. It's economically devastating. I know people have small businesses, and we're all shutting down, and people are getting unemployed, and we're going to run out of money if this continues much longer. But the economy will rebound, and if we get swamped in the hospitals, we are truly going to run out of the capacity to care for the very sick.
Talking outside of my area of expertise, the single best thing we can do for the economy is to make this as short as possible. And that means social distancing, because the longer we don't social distance, the longer it continues. That's my economic view of this.
Well, I think yesterday one of you mentioned that Mendocino County is 35th in the state in social distancing performance. So that is a very strange number to even know. So how do you measure how Mendocino County is doing?
So just to sort of feed the paranoiacs amongst us out there, but apparently really? There is the capacity to track cell phone movement. And so the New York Times got a hold of the data nationwide able to track cell phone movement and see how much it decreased over the course of several weeks. The latest date that they tracked it was through the 20th of March. So it was really before the shelter-in-place orders came through, and we've really clamped down in the last several days. That being said, as of the 20th of this month, we were, I believe, 35th out of, 54 counties in California. To be fair, though, it's still not necessarily a fair comparison. This is a rural county, and even going grocery shopping requires a lot of cell phone movement. You know, we can fudge the data and leave our cell phones at home, perhaps, and then we'll look better. But it's just an interesting metric.
Leave yourself at home, right?
Exactly.
Just everybody stay home.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm deciding that I'm going to eat everything in the house before I go to the grocery store again. And luckily, we have some vanilla soy milk. Yeah. So if I run out of dairy, we'll be okay. But I just really, 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 if it's not an important, if it's not crucial, just stay at home, right?
So one of the things we've talked about in clinic recently, too, in our group meetings, is a concern over a lot of people hearing this two and a half week shelter in place. And that's tangible to most of us. A few people are lucky enough to have a 2 week vacation, that kind of thing. Our concern is growing over this not being done in two and a half weeks. And the word indefinite is a lot less tangible, but I really think that's what we need to be thinking about, more so in terms of grocery shopping, et cetera. I don't think this is going to be done in two and a half weeks at all.
It certainly won't be over with in 2 to 2.5 weeks. What we can perhaps do in the next 2 to 3 weeks is really flatten this acute phase of the curve. And if we do that, then we can, smartly use contact tracing and put out hot spots where this virus is going to linger and pop up. And, there'll be outbreaks here and there. And that will go on. Maybe not indefinitely, but certainly for the next 12 to 18 months while public health officials continue to struggle localized containment. But the national sort of tidal wave, that's coming in the next couple of weeks. And, we just really want to urge the community to stay away. And really, it's every little tiny thing that you can do to minimize social interaction or potential exposure makes a difference. So if you need groceries, think about what you're going to need for the next week or even two and minimize extra trips. If you don't need something, don't go get it. Any door handle, any exposure is really just an unnecessary risk of furthering the spread of this in the county.
And then on to the next person.
Right.
That you do need to contact.
Exactly. And so to circle back, Alice, I think you asked me about how it's presenting. I'm sorry, Alicia.
It's okay.
And what makes this very difficult to manage is, first off, there's a significant percentage of patients who won't manifest any significant symptoms. Secondly, as I've discussed time and time again, there is a latency period where you don't have symptoms and you...
About 10 days?
Well, it can be as long as 10 days, but maybe the average is more like 3 to 5. Where you're infectious, but you're not yet symptomatic. And then there's the period after you've recovered. And how long after that are you still infectious? So there's a lot of variables. It's not just a question of do you have a cough, a cold, and a fever. There's a lot of variables, which is really why the global message is stay away from one another. Minimize contact at least 6 feet. Don't touch your face. Wash your hands. Use hand sanitizer. Stockpile soap. You don't need toilet paper. You need soap and water.
And reflexively, increase your non physical contact with people, please.
Yes, exactly. So, and I think that's one of the things that I talked about with Dr. Trotter last week is we really need to take care of each other. This is going to be a really stressful period. I am, for one, sick and tired of thinking and talking about COVID. And, for people out there who have received the message, please turn this off. Go listen to some good music.
And then turn it back on.
Yeah. So, I apologize for the messaging, but it's really just that important.
Well, we know that there are people not getting the message, right? There are, because
absolutely,
we have had crowds coming to the governor's closed parking lots, the state park parking lots, and we've had people on the coast now putting up signs saying coast closed, stay away, as urban people maybe come up here trying to get away from the crush that's going on in the Bay Area. And so how do we think about that? How do we reach the people who aren't taking this as seriously as we need to?
Just spread the word. spread the word. And I, you know, that is a legitimate concern. Is, you know, as the Bay Area, if the Bay Area becomes more like New York, the last thing our tiny little health infrastructure needs is an influx of people who will bring the disease and get sick.
Mendocino County has done a great job for years marketing our 26 state parks. We have a lot of parks. And they're, my personal experience just last weekend was I've never seen so many people out.
Wow.
I was still able to stay off those single track trails, but part of me is very, very happy that people are discovering our parks. Not now. Come back later.
Yeah. That being said, it is okay to go outside and
yes.
walk around.
Please.
And, you know, even just, you know, find a country road somewhere. Just stay away from each other or stay 6 feet apart. Or if you're co-inhabiting a dwelling or an apartment with somebody, then you're in the same boat together and you obviously don't need to stay 6 feet apart
right.
from one another.
All right. Well, this is meant to be a call-in program. So we've been doing these 3 o'clock updates. Dr. Colfax has been bringing in colleagues from around the county to give you the latest update and also to answer your questions. So if you'd like to call in, the phone lines are open. It's 707-895-2448. That's 707-895-2448. And you can call in with your COVID-19 coronavirus related questions and just like clockwork, we have a call. Good afternoon, caller. You're live on the air.
Yes, I had a question. You talked about the parks closing and everything, and I understand to a certain point, but it's like, what are the people that live in apartments supposed to do, like in the city and so on, and places that, you know, that's all they have is that space inside. You say it's okay to go walk outdoors, but then you're walking on the street. I mean, it's hard to maybe stay away from people, especially in, like, cities.
No, and that's an excellent question. I mean, I think, you know, the fact that we are a largely rural county gives us a leg up on trying to shelter in place in a place like New York City, for example. You know, I think it is okay to go outside and walk around the block or walk up and down the city street. But it is imperative that you stay away from other people within 6 or even 8 or 10, 12 feet. You can't be too paranoid at this point. You certainly don't want to touch objects out on the streets of Ukiah unless you're engaged in something critical. But access to rural areas where you can get fresh air rather than sitting cooped up in an apartment or a house is important. I think that the you know, the state and local governments made the decision that they didn't want large numbers of people congregating in our state and local parks. And I think, unfortunately, that was the appropriate decision because we really need to telegraph the message that Mendocino County is, for the short term, closed for business.
As like every county in the state. All right, we have another call. Hello, caller. You're live on the air.
Oh, hi, this is Jan Wax, and first I want to say thanks so much to Dr. Drew Colfax. He's one of the local heroes. I want, in the spirit of not having to go out and interface much, let's see, is my phone on?
Yeah.
Can you hear my phone?
Yes, you sound great.
Can you hear my radio?
No.
Okay. Well, Boonberry Farm Store in Boonville will take your order by phone or by email with pickup outside their door. I just wrote out a list, emailed it to Bert Cohen at bbfpacific.net, and included my phone number. And he got it and called me back with what he did and didn't have, and he had most everything. And he'll send me the total due, and I can send my husband down for pickup. And that really does limit the amount of exposure we have to others and to us.
That's by great.
Going into stores. And that's what I had to say.
Thanks for the tip.
No, and I think that's a good point, Jan, is, you know, I'm not a social networker, and up until this this pandemic, my exposure in any social media was essentially zero. But there's something called Facebook, I think, out there. sharing information about this and things like this in terms of how to get food and supplies and how we can help each other out is imperative. I think that's a really good point. Yeah, one other thing I would just urge is when you get those groceries back to your house, you probably should wipe them down and rinse them off just to minimize any viral load that they may have.
All right, let's take another call. Whoops. Let's try another one. Hello, caller. You're live on the air.
Hi. I had a question. First off, thank you very much for providing the service. This is Robert on the coast. And my wife, as a lot of people, dipped deeply into the font of medical knowledge available on Facebook and has been recommending drinking water with lemon in it and frequent sips of warm water throughout the day and avoiding cold beverages. Is there any medical support for this theory?
Well, first, I must disclose that I'm not a marriage and family therapist. So any advice I might give you should not be used in your case. No, I'm sorry, Robert. There is no scientific basis for that to be effective. It certainly sounds calming, which we could all use. So I'm not against that part. I know that one of my neighbors came over and raided my lemon tree, so this may be a thing that I didn't realize, which
did they
was
ask
fine.
You first?
She did actually ask. So, no, Robert, I wish you the best. It will not harm you, I can tell you that, but do not feel that it gives you any protection. So please don't do something like this and feel that it is then okay to go out. You still need to distance yourself.
All right. Thanks for the question,
great.
Robert. All right. Let's take another one. The lines are just lighting up. Hello, caller. You're live on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to really thank you guys for putting this on. And I have a point of information I'd like to try and get cleared up. You know, we've been telling there's been shortage of masks and the healthcare workers need them, and N95s are better and such things. And throughout much of the world, I see entire populations wearing masks. And I understand that health care workers need them more. But why is this country one of the very few that are telling us that regular people don't need masks and don't appreciably gain from needing masks when the rest of the world seems to think they do, and we think they do for healthcare workers?
All right. Thanks for the question.
I have mixed feelings about this. I've said that one of the unintended benefits of a mask is keeping your hands off your face. So you could wear a burlap sack for that. Not to make light of your question, there is a discordance of seeing this everywhere. We also really want to keep the message of social distancing. So there really is a very low risk of contracting it if you're being socially distanced. So in certain really close areas, it's impossible to be 6 feet apart from other people. I get that. In our circumstances, I think it's completely possible to be socially distanced appropriately where a regular mask makes no influence on your risks. Does that help?
And providers, obviously, when they're examining patients or in, you know, performing any sort of procedure, are going to be quite close to the patient. And so the mask is imperative in that setting.
Right. When we do a swab, the mask has to come off, and, yeah, we have to be protected.
Yeah.
All right, let's go with another call. Hello, caller, you're live on the air. Can you turn your radio off, please?
Sorry, I just did.
Okay, great. Thanks. Go ahead.
I had a question about, okay, it might be a little too soon for this, but if you have actually had this COVID-19 or tested positive for it, whether or not you actually had a test or not, and you got through it and you're still alive and everything's, you know, functioning, is there something going on with it affecting lung capacity? And I was kind of reading something about it, but wasn't really sure if that was something that was going on or not. And I just was kind of interested in the after effect of the COVID-19 virus, if there was something to look out for, since we're kind of self whatever self-diagnosing at this point at home and staying home. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
What I would say to that is not specific to COVID-19. No, we don't know that at this point. But yes, some people actually have asthma-like symptoms with any viral syndrome. Keep in mind that we can see radiograph chest x-ray changes sometimes weeks after someone thinks they're clinically well from pneumonia. So long after we think we're well, there are still bodily changes happening. That goes back to what Dr. Colfax was saying about, do we even know when someone stops becoming infective after they've had COVID-19? No, we don't yet.
We have a good estimate, though. I mean, the CDC is currently recommending a week to sort of simplify their recommendations after your symptoms have resolved. And then to circle back to that question, the unique thing about this illness is both the fact that it's quite infectious and can make a minority of people quite sick. For the rest of us, it's going to be more or less like any other viral illness, which is to say you're going to get it, you're going to get sick, and you're going to recover, and you're not going to have significant, if any, measurable sequelae from it. The people who get really sick and go on ventilators, their lungs are going to take a long time to recover if they survive to come off the ventilator.
That would be true for most people that spend a month on a ventilator.
Correct, of course.
All right, let's take another call. Hello, call, you're live on the air.
Hi.
Do you have a question for the doctors?
Yes, I do. What viral load actually makes us sick? How much of the stuff is required to start the infection?
Good question.
That's a really good question. John and I are both looking at each other because we don't know the answer.
Well, I would offer an educated guess to say that most viral symptoms have very little to do with the virus itself and actually our immune response to the virus. That is precisely what you will hear from people when they say, "I got the flu from the flu shot." No, you did not. I promise you, you did not. Mm-hmm. You did have an immune response to that vaccine, which resembles the flu. So that's part of what we're seeing with the COVID-19 people that have the severe response is how their immune system reacts to this.
Or overreacts.
Overreacts, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the actual number of viral bodies that need to be inhaled or rubbed on your nostrils.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any number on that. And, you know, it's going to be very hard to quantify that because they're so tiny. And even, you know, the closest analogy is bacterial infections, which we can get a very good idea of, like, do you need 6 or do you need 6,000?
Right.
The virus.
Well, I mean,
go on.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You
touch a doorknob that has the virus on it.
Right.
You know, how much is going to be on that doorknob? Is anybody looking at, you know?
Probably not. Again, okay. Somewhat academic.
Yeah.
We're going to recommend that you don't touch the doorknob instead of take that.
Force push.
Right.
The question, the answer is none. Or if you do touch it, wash your hands or sanitize your hands. Because
right.
It's quite clear that you can, in fact, get it off of surfaces that are contaminated that have been contacted by a sick individual.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Great.
Let's take another call. Hello, caller. You're live on the air. Hello?
Hi. Am I on?
You are live. Yep.
Okay. For the doctors, I have a suggestion that I'd like to get through to Dr. Doohan or whoever on the task force might be interested. It concerns a speeded up, more practical approach to testing for the virus. I've learned some stuff recently. There are solutions that are they're used by researchers to test for RNA and DNA, and they're quite quick to perform the tests, and they're cheap, and they're being suggested as what they term as an environmental check. So in other words, you could swab a doorknob or something and see if that surface is infected. It's not approved for clinical use with human beings, but objects, and you could even look at it as a proxy for clinical testing, like you could swab the bed rails of a patient and test that. And so I was wondering if anybody in the county task force would be interested in finding out more about that or if they're already aware of this option.
All right. Thanks for the comment. Got anything to say about that?
There are methods in use currently that are I know are being worked on to be expanded to COVID-19 that don't require any culture whatsoever. So what we call RFLP, we are looking at to identify short segments of DNA, RNA in this case, that are unique to COVID-19 that we can just play the match game. So it's like that word puzzle you do. Without having to culture. So it's faster, it's a very quick turnaround, that kind of thing, and takes a lot less handling. I know that's in the process. It's just early.
Yeah. And I can reassure both the caller and the rest of the listeners that Dr. Doohan and the Department of Public Health and the hospital system are working quite hard to get more and faster tests. The 10-day test is not really helpful to much of anybody, but there are a lot of people who are engaged in it. You know, unfortunately, we just got behind the eight ball as a country on rolling out the testing, you know, back in February, even January.
It'll be interesting to see how over the course of the next few years we respond to that reality that we were behind the eight ball?
Well, you know, we should vote to fund public health. And, you know, there are not a lot of doctors who are saying anything but that right now.
Yeah. Well, we have a few more calls, but it is 3:32. So do you guys want to wrap it up and we'll put a rain check on for tomorrow, or do you want to take another call?
Why don't we just put a rain check on and we'll just keep going forward on a daily basis?
Do this sustainably.
Basis?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Drew Colfax and Dr. John Rocha. We appreciate you being here so much, and we will see you, Dr. Colfax, tomorrow at 3 o'clock. And thank you to all of the callers who called in. These are terrific questions. We're really glad to hear the questions as well. I think it's helpful for the doctors to hear what is on your minds as well. And once again, we're all in this together. Stay home. We'll be here on KZYX keeping you company through the day. And thanks so much for listening.